The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Special Counsel Mueller goes before the House. We'll analyze the results.
They would have gotten the best out of Mueller. It might have been a different Mueller. That afternoon Mueller was certainly different from morning Mueller.
Also, Iran continues to pose a threat.
Frankly, it's getting harder for me to want to make a deal with Iran, because they behave very badly, and I'll tell you, it could go either way very easily.
And Nancy Pelosi's agenda gets hijacked by four freshman members of Congress.
So she's trying to save off impeachment. The squad gets attacked. The impeachment resolution gets put back on the floor. It gets a vote.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And let me invite you to join me now by video. Follow me, of course, on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. The situation with Iran continues to be quite tense. Iran threatens our allies in the region and has become increasingly hostile, bold in its action, piracy now. Dealing with a hostile country is tricky. I spoke with Senator Tom Cotton on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
I would like to play for you the president on Iran and then come back and get your reaction to it.
Frankly, it's getting harder for me to want to make a deal with Iran, because they behave very badly. They're saying bad things. And I'll tell you, it could go either way very easily, very easily. And I'm OK either way it goes.
Now, Senator Cotton, to summarize, they lie a lot. He said they lie a lot. They are the number one state of terror in the world.
They put out propaganda. They put out lies.
I think he demonstrated more understanding of the mullahs. What did you make of the president's candor?
That pretty much sums it up, Hugh. He touched on the fundamental nature of Iran's regime for 40 years. They've been waging a campaign of terror and aggression against the civilized world, trying to overthrow the governments of their neighbors, taking hostages and supporting terrorism. He kind of summed up the challenges they face now. Their economy is on the verge of a depression. We've totally crushed them with our sanctions, taking hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars away from them that would go to terrorist groups like Hamas and Hezbollah. And he summed up what they're doing. They're lashing out right now because of the constraints of those sanctions, and they fear the last remnants of the nuclear deal will fall apart as well.
Now, Senator, you remember the Mayaguez incident at the close of the Vietnam War, the last action of the Vietnam War, many people, three Marines killed, when the Khmer Rouge took a freighter, and we took it back. Are the Brits justified in using force to get back their ship?
Of course the British are justified in using force to reclaim one of their vessels that was hijacked by Iranian pirates and taken hostage inside of Iran. I'd be surprised if the British people are going to stand for long, the Ayatollahs hijacking their ships and taking their fellow citizens hostage. And the United States, I'm confident, will stand with our British allies.
Now, your friend, Secretary Pompeo, told the Brits yesterday it's their job to protect their ships. That's sort of the Nixon doctrine revisited. What do you think about that?
Every nation has an obligation to protect itself and protect its interests. Great Britain still has a Navy that's capable of defending those interests. What we would like to see Great Britain do, what we'd like to see all of our international partners and allies do, is form a broader maritime security initiative inside the Gulf that is going to stand up to one outlaw nation. The combined might of the United States and Great Britain and the civilized world with navies to support such an initiative far exceeds anything that Iran can bring to bear.
Now, we have a new deal, a budget deal. It is, in my view, not perfect, but it does fund the military for 2 years, which I think is great. Will we build ships? People have got, the Brits realize now they haven't got enough ships to do what they need to do. We don't have enough ships. Do you think we will actually build the ships, Senator Cotton?
Hugh, I haven't reviewed the details of the budget agreement yet. It happened late last night. I am pleased that there is some increase in defense spending. It's not as much as Secretary Mattis proposed in his final budget before he resigned late last year, but staring down the threats of radical budget cuts because of the dead hand of an eight-year-old law was a pretty stark alternative. I'll be reviewing the details going forward. Whatever happens with this budget deal, though, this moment is a good example of why we need those ships. No matter how advanced, how technologically superior our ships are, a ship cannot be in both the South China Sea to counteract China, the Persian Gulf to counteract Iran, and the Mediterranean or the North Atlantic to counteract Russia at the same time.
Four Democrats nobody knew about 2 years ago are disrupting the entire Democratic Party. Now known popularly as the Squad, even the experienced and powerful Nancy Pelosi finds the controversial group impossible to control. They're known for their repeated expressions of anti-Semitism and their embrace of socialism. Now a new poll shows a full 40% of U.S. voters see those four as representing Democrats in Washington, D.C. It's a disaster for those Democrats hoping to unseat Donald Trump in 2020. Town Hall editor Katie Pavlik discussed the dilemma with Salem host Sebastian Gorka.
I'm going to do the lefty identity politics thing on you.
Okay.
You're a woman.
Right.
And you're young.
Yes.
So what do you think about young women in the squad?
In the squad.
Do they represent you?
No, but they would also say, well, I'm white, so I don't count.
Oh, sorry. Ruled
and I'm
out,
a conservative woman, so okay. My views don't count. But as one of their peers, I would say that
Katie Pavlich's peers with the squad.
Yes, I am. But I would say I acknowledge the fact that socialism has never worked. And I'm a student of communist history and know that I don't want to go back to the way it used to be. And I have family in former Yugoslavia, and they are not fans of communism and the Russians and the Soviet Union, for example. And the United States of America is the most wonderful country that has ever existed in the history of mankind, and God willing will continue to be. But the ideas of these four, which are not based on race, my criticism of them is not based on that, or their skin color or their gender. It's based on the idea that their very fraudulent ideas have been tried before and have resulted in the human suffering of hundreds of millions of people.
Okay.
And I don't think America is in the business of a human suffering, so we should reject their ideas.
All right, let's get very tactical. That's the big picture strategic, the damage that the ideologies they're espousing now in the 21st century have done to humankind in the last 100 years. Let's get to the last week and a half. Who won the Twitter war between the president and the squad? Can we draw a victor and vanquished? Is it too early? If we can, who won?
Well, I think given the war is still ongoing, President Trump is still tweeting about the squad as we speak, but the squad's also talking about him in speeches. So they're both on each other's minds. But overall, I think President Trump won this politically, and this is why.
Okay.
And I said this when this first happened last week, because he has... Everyone kept saying, well, the Democrats are at each other's throat. Don't get in the middle of your enemies going after each other. However, they were also creating some space. Nancy Pelosi was trying to say that they're just four people. They only have four votes. They don't control the narrative of the House. They don't have any kind of real power in the Democratic Party. But because President Trump tweeted about them, they initially had this emotional overreaction about the things that he said. And Nancy Pelosi immediately ran to Twitter herself to defend the squad.
Who'd called her racist.
Who called her racist just 3 days before. And she went to defend them. And then she put a resolution on the House floor, violated the House rules to say what she said about the president, calling him a racist. And then the vote came down in a way that was very negative for Nancy Pelosi. And then they had an impeachment vote the next day, which was even worse. So she's been trying to stave off impeachment.
137 Democrats jump ship.
Right. So she's trying to stave off impeachment. The squad gets attacked. The impeachment resolution gets put back on the floor. It gets a vote. Nancy Pelosi had 95 people vote for impeachment, which she's been trying to avoid politically. It could be said out in the country. It's not a popular thing. And then she had more than 100 people voting with Republicans, showing solidarity with the Republican Party
right.
and the president. So I think overall the president has won that that debate in terms of marrying the two. Yes, but it is certainly ongoing. And if you look at the polling of where these four come down with the districts that Democrats want to hang on to, they're described as toxic. They don't like their socialism. This is among Democrats living in the middle of the country, who, by the way, are Trump voters. And so I think politically for now, he has won that debate.
Does this mean, because we have more than 470 days to go? Yes.
It's a while.
It is a while.
Yep.
Does that mean that this is all good for the president and for conservatives? That these people, I mean, because there's two ways to look at this. You have the radicals that really are driving the agenda for the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. It's clear. Nobody's talking about what Chuck Schumer said in the last 7 months.
Right.
Nobody. Everybody's talking about the Green New Scam, detention camps, and everything else, all this garbage. Does it mean that it's good that the president has shone a light on them? Or should we be more disturbed, especially with your family history, my family history, who's suffered under first fascism, then communism? Should we just, I mean, this is shocking, isn't it? That four people who are freshmen have taken over the Democrat Party and they're socialists or they hate America.
Well, I think you've seen this happening over the past probably 50 years, though. And academia is full of people
right.
like AOC and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar.
They were giving lectures. It's, you know, Noam Chomsky, Michael Moore, or bombing the Pentagon or the State
Bill
Department.
Ayers, right.
They weren't sitting on the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Congress.
Right. And now they are, right. right. And so, you know, they are very patient, and their ideology has culminated throughout
through
a generation. Right,
march
to the institutions. It's right. been backed up, and now they're out there and they're not apologizing for it. It's no longer something that has the communist portion of their base and their left-wing ideology no longer has to stay in the corner and be hidden. They can come out and be open about it and really gain a lot of power considering how much social media presence they have and the media glomming onto them and defending them against a president who they hate and
yes.
who they want to leave office. So therefore they are going to do that by embracing these four as they have. But in terms of their ideology, it's a scary ideology. It's one that has, like I said, put, you know, hundreds of millions of people into horrible human suffering positions.
Or killed them.
Or killed them. And it's also a false ideology when it comes to actually fixing the problems that they claim to want to be fixing or standing up for the people that they claim that they're standing up for. And so I think the president, not just with these four, but in general, is a genius at allowing Democrats to expose themselves. So by tweeting about the squad initially, they just jumped into action and they exposed themselves. Nancy Pelosi ran to defend them. They exposed that she's really not that separate from them.
No.
And Democrats on the campaign trail did the exact same thing. And people have been asking the question about, well, why is he going after four members of the House who are just low-level Congress freshmen? Because every Democrat on the campaign trail who is running against him has completely embraced their political ideology and their policy positions on the debate stage. So you can say that, yeah, they only have four votes in Congress, but they are driving the train when it comes to what Democrats are campaigning on against President Trump. And that is why he's responding to them and making them, rightly so, the face of the Democratic Party.
I get a sense, especially with Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, sooner or later, they're just going to go even too far for the Democrats. What do you think, Katie?
I don't know if they're going to go too far.
Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Coming up.
They would have gotten the best out of Mueller. It might have been a different Mueller. That afternoon Mueller was certainly different from morning Mueller.
Chuck Todd and I review the Mueller hearings when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. On Wednesday, Special Counsel Robert Mueller spent several hours before two House committees run by Democrats. The goal was highly transparent. Get Mueller to say what needs to be said to justify articles of impeachment being introduced by the House Democrats. But Mueller didn't deliver, as many predicted he would. In fact, it was a terrible, awful, stumbling appearance, and it appeared to kill impeachment, not inflate it. On top of that, Special Counsel Mueller often appeared somewhat dazed on matters that were very, very simple. Like a boxer who had been staggered too many times, if it had been a fight, they'd have called it TKO. I was joined by Chuck Todd of NBC News Meet the Press to discuss exactly what happened on Wednesday. Chuck, I think you and I saw the same thing, and it wasn't good for the impeachment Democrats.
It wasn't. I think there was a, you know, where do I begin? Look, I think the biggest mistake they made was in the order they went, right? If the purpose you know, and that's the other thing, right? What was the purpose of the hearing? Was the purpose to conduct oversight on how Mueller conducted his investigation? I don't think it was that. That doesn't appear to be. But if that had been it, the Democrats didn't do that. If the purpose that they kept saying was to bring life to the report, okay. Well, Bob Mueller made part one for a reason, right? And anytime you tell us a story, you start with the crime, right? You start with the central issue. The central issue was Russian interference and what they did. So I actually think the biggest mistake they made, if the whole goal was to bring life to this report and to make people understand it better, then why do you start with the process first and not the crime? Like, frankly, who watches any TV show that way? I don't mean to make it like that sound like that. You bring people in with the initial issue. And by the way, that's what Mueller was most animated on. Like, they would have gotten the best out of Mueller. It might have been a different Mueller. That afternoon Mueller was certainly different from morning Mueller, but I think it's because topically, Mueller was more comfortable talking about the initial crime than the back and forth about the decision of, oh, what's the Constitution say about obstruction? So I do think, like, just simply in format is the first place where I think they made a mistake.
Now, do you think this effectively empowers Nancy Pelosi, as it was reported by Politico she did yesterday afternoon, to tell the impeachment Democrats, or like the Reconstruction Republicans of 150 years ago, no, we're done, and we're going to move forward on a different basis? Do you think she can now crush the impeachment Democrats?
To a point, I do think the more the president tries to claim what happened yesterday was a victory for him. The victory in that, if you think not starting impeachment is a victory, then yeah, then maybe you can declare victory. But, you know, it's still a very troubling report on a number of levels. I think the more the president gloats, actually, the more difficult the speaker's job is to quell this a little bit. You know, in our politics, there's no middle ground anymore. There's nobody seems to meet the moment. This president never. You know, if he really wanted to avoid impeachment, he would have said nothing. But that's not what he does, right? He doesn't say nothing. He always has to comment. He always has to get involved, which I think only actually makes it harder for him to get the outcome that he wants.
On Wednesday's hearing, Congresswoman Debbie Lesko of Arizona engaged in a crucial back and forth with Special Counsel Mueller, one that became the subsequent basis for Mueller repudiating answers he had given Lesko in the afternoon. So in the afternoon, Special Counsel Mueller had to take back what he had testified to Representative Lesko. And that, of course, destroys the credibility of a witness. Debbie Lesko joined me on Thursday morning on my show. What was that like yesterday? Because I actually felt bad for the special counsel and was encouraging Republicans online in the afternoon to lay off of him because it was over. If it was a fight, they would have stopped it.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I had never met Mr. Mueller before or talked with him before, so I quite honestly was very surprised. He seemed disoriented. I'm not sure what was going on there, but that was surprising.
Well, you are a very experienced legislator. You've seen a lot of people Yes. testify. This is not your first rodeo in terms of watching witnesses. So when you found him to be completely not what you expected, that's why you were surprised, I gather.
That definitely is why I was surprised. At first, I thought maybe he was doing it to kill time or something like that, because, you know, he has a long resume. And so I was quite surprised. Very basic questions he had trouble answering. And it didn't matter if it was from the Republican question or a Democrat question. People would read from the report and then then say, is that correct, or something to that effect. And he really struggled. He would say, could you repeat that? I'll have to get back to you. You know, things like that. I mean, I'm not sure what was happening there, but it was obvious he was struggling.
When you left the dais and you take breaks, you talk to your colleagues. What were you saying to each other about Special Counsel Mueller?
I don't think we talked a lot. I talked to some people, and we basically all noticed the same thing and thought we better not dive into him too hard, because he was definitely struggling.
But so you did ease off of him, because I did not want him beaten up by Republicans. I thought it was not fair to him. He was clearly out of his depth and feeble. Actually, did the word feeble come up?
The word feeble did not come up in my circle of who I talked to. But again, it was. I'm not sure what was happening. I don't know if he didn't get any sleep. I don't know if he was stressed out. I'm not sure what was happening, but it was very obvious. And to the people that were watching, that he was having he was struggling. And this is something I did not expect. I expected somebody that was going to be really on top of their game and coming back at us and that type of thing.
Now, the thing I wanted to stress, I tweeted about it. While I was watching the testimony, you said to him, look, you just told Ted Lieu, and you were talking to Special Counsel Mueller, that you did not indict the president because of the OLC opinion. But on May 29, your office said that wasn't the case. And he confirmed to you that that's what he said. But then 3 hours later, he withdrew his testimony. Were you watching in the afternoon when he basically conceded your point?
When I heard what he said, his answer to Mr. Lieu, the Democrat, I knew that I had to respond to that, because that was just a huge statement that I assumed that Mr. Mueller was confused about his answer or something. That was my assumption, and I wanted to set it straight.
So then, Congresswoman Lesko, you've been there for you've been watching this for a year now. What happens next? Are we done? Can we all go home now and just say there is no there, no collusion, no conspiracy, no obstruction? We're done.
Well, I think for the American people, we're done. But unfortunately, I've watched too closely my Democrat colleagues, and Mr. Nadler is just obsessed, absolutely obsessed. I cannot describe it any other way, how some of my Democrat colleagues, I mean, a lot of them, especially in judiciary, are obsessed about undermining the president of the United States and impeaching him. And they just, it's like a rabid animal or something. They cannot get their mind on anything else except taking out the president. It's really hurting the American public.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Our podcast is sponsored by Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF provides help at no cost to those whose liberty is being violated, but they can't do it without your help. Call 800-691-8969. That's 800-691-8969. Or visit townhallreview.com. Coming up.
The issue with the left is you can't tell the truth.
A shocking story of bigotry when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Everything was exactly how it seemed. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. The ongoing effort to silence those on the right has taken a dark turn over the past decade. Many are losing their jobs. Some have been harassed out of business. A beauty queen even lost her title. Here's Dennis Prager.
Miss Michigan 2019, Kathy Zhu, stripped of her title, this is ABC News, over offensive social media posts. It gives you an idea of the totalitarian nature of the left. A Michigan beauty queen was stripped of her title over comments she made on social media about Muslim women and black people. Executives with Miss World America told Kathy Zhu, the Miss Michigan 2019 winner, that her, quote, offensive, insensitive, and inappropriate posts, unquote, on social media were in violation of the organization's rules and conditions, according to email screenshots posted by Zhu on Thursday. Therefore, and effective immediately, MWA, that's Miss World America, does not recognize you as a participant of any sort or in any capacity as it relates to any and all events of MWA. One of the Twitter posts in question read, "Did you know that the majority of black deaths are caused by other blacks? Fix problems within your own community first before blaming others." You know how many blacks agree with that? That the greatest problems in black life are not whites, but are within the black community. Why is that anti-black? I think it's pro-black because it means you actually care about blacks. You don't care about demagoguery. If you went to a doctor and you smoked two packs a day of cigarettes and you were obese and you were having breathing problems, and the doctor said, look, I got to tell you, it's not society here. It's really your habits that are the primary issue. First of all, stop smoking, you know, eat less, have more exercise, take care of yourself. If the doctor blames the environment versus you, he may not be doing you a favor. The other read, there is a try a hijab on booth at my college campus. So you're telling me that it's now just a fashion accessory and not a religious thing? Or are you just trying to get women used to being oppressed under Islam? So you see, the issue with the left is you can't tell the truth. Because the truth will hurt. You can hurt white Christian males. You could say anything you want. But any other group, you can't say anything. Try a hijab on booth at the university? Isn't that amazing? I think she made the point. What would the reaction be if they had, if they were giving out rosary beads at the college? It's in tiny print. I'll try to read it. This is from Miss World America, Ms. Kathy Zhu. It has been brought to the attention of Miss World America. By the way, this is the curious thing. What if a Miss World America from another state had said in a tweet, America is racist, or the president is racist? Do you think they would have stripped her title from her? Yeah, she'd probably win Miss World America. Your social media accounts contain offensive, insensitive, and inappropriate content. Now, that's amazing. Offensive, insensitive, and inappropriate. Wow. To say that far more blacks are killed by other blacks than in any other way, why is that? And I mean this sincerely. Why is that offensive, insensitive, or inappropriate? No, and inappropriate. Why is it all three? Does it help black life to really blame whites? Are whites at fault because 70 to 80% of black kids are born to a woman who isn't married? And in violation of Miss World America's rules and conditions, specifically the contestant requirement of, quote, being of good character and whose background is not likely to bring into disrepute Miss World America or any person associated with the organization. So for tweeting that, she's not of good character? My suspicion is she's a very good character.
Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Coming up.
People are getting really out of control with this white privilege stuff.
A Georgia lawmaker caught in a lie when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Georgia State Representative Erica Thomas, as you will hear in a moment, claims a man in line at Publix berated her for having too many items in a line set aside for just a few. Then he allegedly told her, go back where you came from. Only a few weeks ago, that line would not have made news. But due to the attention that line received after a controversial Donald Trump tweet, it is now considered overtly racist. Mike Gallagher addressed the melee on his program earlier this week. But before we get to that, a new development came just after Gallagher's program. The Publics employee came forward and claims not only did the man never say that to Erica Thomas, but Thomas said that to the man angrily and repeatedly, which makes her emotional announcement all the more troublesome. Here's Mike Gallagher.
A Georgia state representative named Erica Thomas tearfully claimed on Facebook that a white man in a grocery store told her to go back where you came from. But that didn't turn out the way she intended, because she held a press conference where she was telling reporters that this white man had verbally accosted her. And of course, she's blaming Trump, because the chant is still what the media can't give up on. They're still back on the chant last week from North Carolina. It's ancient history, but they want to pin that on President Trump, and they're going to blame him. And he's telling people of color to go back to the country they came from, blah, blah, blah. So while she's, I guess while she's holding the press conference, the white man in question interrupted the press conference. Is that right, Lance? And in fact said, I'm actually a Cuban American Democrat, and I didn't tell you to go back to where you came from because of anything to do with politics. I was irritated that you brought a gazillion items to the checkout lane, the express checkout lane. You were way over your limit. And by the way, sidebar, don't you hate it when people do that? It's so doggone annoying. So this guy apparently got into it with her. She turned it into this big political thing. See, here's the flip side of all the racist bombs that people drop everywhere. That's racist. You're racist. He's a racist. She's a racist. So then stuff like this happens, and it apparently is false. Here's the original. If you follow this at all, if you listen to us in the Atlanta area or anywhere in Georgia, maybe you know this story. I mean, here's the original post on Facebook. This is cut number 8. Here's State Representative Erica Thomas making the claim, this emotional accusation, that she and her little daughter were just minding their own business at a grocery store when the racist white man came calling.
So you know what I decided to go live because I'm very upset, because people are getting really out of control with this white privilege stuff. I'm at the grocery store and I'm in the aisle that says 10 items or less. Yes, I have 15 items, but I'm 9 months pregnant and I can't stand up for long. And this white man comes up to me and says, you lazy son of a bitch. He says, you lazy son of a bitch. You need to go back where you came from. And he says that. I said, sir, you don't even know me. I'm not lazy. I'm 9 months pregnant. He says, you're ignorant. You're ignorant. And I'm not ignorant. And it hurt me so bad. I'm sorry, y'all, because everything in me wanted to just tell him who I am and how I don't. But I couldn't get anything out. I could just tell him, please leave me alone, please. And my child is just sitting right there. He said, Mama, why would he call you that? Why would he do that?
All right, so that's a painful thing to listen to. And you just, your heart goes out to her. Why would some man say such terrible things to her? Except apparently he didn't. So here's the press conference. That was on, I think, Friday. Then Saturday, of course, the reporters are swooping around her, swooping down on this story, because nothing screams national headline better than a white man berating a black state representative at the local grocery store. So she's holding the press conference, and I guess the guy interrupts the press conference. He winds up showing up. Let me see what cut 9 looks like.
I am facing the man that degraded me and berated me, and I'm not crying. No, I'm not. I'm standing right in front of you. If you know how you make my daughter feel.
Back off before I call the police.
Call the police right now because they are looking for you.
I already talked to them.
It's okay. I am so happy that you're here. And I'm happy that everybody needs to see this man that did this to me. And he thinks that he gets a 5 minutes of fame. You think that you're going to come up when you see police, when you see SB46, you think you're going to come up here and get the spotlight? No, you're not. The only spot that you're going to get is everybody needs to see the man that did this to a woman that's 9 months pregnant.
Are you a state legislator?
Nobody is here for you.
Are you a state legislator?
So she's trying to shut him down. He shows up just to tell his side of the story. She's got her hand in front of his face. She's mad because he's getting his 5 minutes of fame when, of course, she was enjoying her 5 minutes of fame. It was her. This is my press conference. I don't want the guy to come who I'm accusing of doing this terrible thing to show up. Well, he did show up. And then her story starts to unravel because the reporters are watching this exchange and listening to what the guy had to say. And then they're starting to say, well, wait a minute. Maybe this didn't occur quite the way you originally said it did. Cut 10.
I don't want to say he said go back to your country or go back to where he came from, but he was making those types of references is what I remember.
Suddenly, she changed it. I don't want to say he said go back. I don't want to say he said go back to your country. So she changed. A journalist said to her, you don't remember exactly what he said? And that's when she started to hum and a hum and a hum and a hum and a. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, people are at each other's throats, literally and figuratively. People are tense. People are upset. It just seems to me that we do have to stand firm against phony cries of racism.
Coming up, who would you rather have your children entrusted to, a black conservative or a white leftist?
More on the subject of race. Dennis Prager in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook. And in it, you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, the U.S. State Department hosts a second ministerial to advance religious freedom. We'll hear from Sam Brownback, our nation's ambassador at large for religious freedom.
We're after a common human right, and that human right's religious freedom.
And we'll talk to David Curry, president of Open Doors International.
We're sleepwalking. We need to wake up to the violence against Christians worldwide.
Plus, Planned Parenthood's new president, Liana Wen, is out after less than a year in her post.
This is very bad PR for Planned Parenthood.
And the most reluctant convert, C.S. Lewis.
He captures people's imagination for the gospel in a way that I don't think any other writer even comes close.
To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. It is a good thing that we live in a day when being a racist is abhorrent to most people. The problem is that people use the term racist not to genuinely attack genuine racists, but often just to decide their opponents, many times simply because they disagree on a political topic. Conservatives are accused of racism far more often than those on the left. It's a label nobody wants because it's toxic and deservedly so, and it has become so often used inappropriately. It's losing its punch. Here again is Dennis Prager.
So here's a question for those who accuse us conservatives of being racist or Trump supporters for being racist. So ask that person this question. Who do you think I, the conservative, or I, the Trump supporter, feel closer to? A white leftist or a black conservative? Then you will know they're either liars or truth tellers. Because if they say you feel closer to a white leftist, you know they're sick or lying. There is no third possibility. That in one fell swoop answers the gargantuan lie that Trump supporters and conservatives and Republicans are racist. Okay? Who do we feel closer to? Who would we rather teach our children? That's pretty. That's pretty powerful. No, who would you rather have your children entrusted to, a black conservative or a white leftist? You're all a fraud on the left. You're a bloody fraud with all your lies about us being racist. And nobody calls you out, because who's going to call you out? The New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, NPR. Who's going to call you out on your gigantic lie that we're racist? You lowlifes. You live and bathe in lies. And this proves it. Who would you rather have your child educated by? If you're a conservative black or a white leftist. Frauds. They're all frauds on the left. What? To marry. Exactly. How's that? To marry. That's right. That's right. Black conservative? Oh, my God. It's a non-issue. It's simply a non-issue. Any of you on the left have an answer to my question? Why isn't my question devastating to the gigantic lie that Trump supporters, conservatives, and Republicans are racist?
Thanks for joining this edition of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers Charlie Richards, David Posian, Michael Cook, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsors, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. If you liked our program, tell a friend to sign up for a podcast. Start at townhallreview.com. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.